Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real-life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is March the 30th, 2014. We got one more day, and we're done with March. And you're tuning in to another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. I hope everyone has had a blessful week so far, and nothing tried to get you down. I almost got upset myself yesterday, but sometimes you just got to shake that devil off it, because he stays busy all the time. But today on air, I have Mr. Alan Anderson. He is the author of A Dog Named Leaf. Now, we all know dogs save people's lives, but we never talk about the spirituality of it all. We never talk about animals actually having a soul. And I know one person questioned that yesterday on Facebook. So keep your ears and your eyes open today. And if you have any questions, please do call in at 347-426-3751. How are you today, Alan?
Oh, I'm doing very good, and thank you for having me a guest on The Bright Side. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you, and I'm glad we stayed in contact, because Alan and I had our schedules. We was busy. We stay busy, so Alan and I worked it out where we could get this together, get it done. So, Alan, give us a little bit about your background.
Well, I have, like you, probably a lot of things in my background. One of the things I'm doing now is working for my day job to earn a living is working with computers and traveling and doing things to help people, have more ability to work with their own systems and all that. But the most important thing I'm doing right now is writing, and I'm writing about animals. And I'm writing about those animals because I want people to know deep in their hearts that there's more going on than just owning a pet. They really are there for you. And I share stories. I share my own story of the dog named Leaf on how important it is to realize that these animals, these cats, these dogs, whatever you have that's with you in your life, they're there for a purpose. And often that purpose is to really help you both through good times and through challenging times. It's really important for me to get that message out. I'm not sure, but I think I lost audio here. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was still talking, and then no, it got disconnected. I was saying I think sometimes people get scared, Alan, when it just even the word spirituality come up, or if they can't see it, they don't believe it. But we would never really think that animals have a soul, that they're actually here just for a purpose other than just protecting a burglar from getting into our house.
That's true. They do that. They love you. They'll protect you. But often people don't need to think that animals have soul. All they have to think, maybe if they feel more comfortable viewing things this way, is that there really is something special about all life. And you know this, and I know this. We in our hearts, we know that we have something special inside. Maybe some people would call it a divine element, maybe soul, maybe whatever the word is, especially when it comes to just communicating with each other. Can you imagine if you looked at someone the way your dog looks at you with that love and adoration and all of that complete, I will do anything for you because I love you. I mean, that to me is truly, truly divine and special, and all of us try to achieve and strive for something like that. And I'm talking to you, and I'm viewing you maybe in a very, very different light than maybe some people view you because they don't realize how special you are as soul. And the same with an animal. When they look at you and they see that special spark, that light that we all have inside, it's just so special. And that makes our day a little bit better if we recognize those special moments you have with your pets.
Yes, so animals are very intelligent. Why aren't you really actually noticing that? They know things. They see things that you don't see. Yes, they are. They're very intelligent. I look at my dog now, and he does stuff, and he knows if I'm hurting. That's how small he is. These animals are not stupid like we'd be thinking. I wish people would stop abusing them badly. I get tired looking at the news now, people throwing them off the building. You're breaking their leg. You, you hit them in the jaw. Come on, that's not how you treat an animal.
No, 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 not at all. It's just there's something just sick about that. I'm glad. You know, hopefully, eventually people who hurt animals will hurt people. They'll hurt themselves. They're just sick, and they need to do something that you know.
Is that what they say they're doing now to them, Al? I think they're giving them time in jail. I got to look up for that information. They're cracking down on that when you're abusing these animals now. They're not playing anymore. It's just getting ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
Now, Alex,
yeah, well, you know, pets, they lower blood pressure. I mean, if you're talking about having a better life, not just a better life by having someone there to support you during times of crisis or during the happy times, but it also makes you have lower blood pressure. They reduce stress. According to studies by different colleges and universities around the country, they help prevent heart disease, and because of the exercise and because of that reduced stress, they basically help older people, especially if they have a pet or someone that they can be with during times when they're feeling lonely, they can help to fight depression. I mean, there's a lot of studies and a lot of people that realize how special an animal can be. But, you know, in my story, A Dog Named Leaf, I talk about the fact that Leaf and I connected during the time when I was going through a life-threatening health problem, and he was going through a whole bunch of problems because we rescued him from a shelter, and he had been abused, like you were talking about earlier, from a person that he was with before. They just put him in the back of a shelter and abandoned him, and he was just a wreck. But we brought him home, and, you know, him and I, we bonded, and we began to trust each other. He began to trust me. I was a man, and apparently there was a man that was abused him, but after a while he realized that he could be petted, and no one's going to hurt him anymore, and he began to trust me. But just through all this, through all this, it's interesting. He was so special. He just had a hard time because he didn't trust people, and I don't know why he would ever trust people after all he's been through. But he began to trust this family. Yeah, this family.
You see how much that is, just like a human being. Because if we get hurt, we don't trust nobody either.
Uh huh. Absolutely.
What's the movie that the movie Ethan Hawke played in, where the dog got abused? It was a wolf. He got abused so badly, and when Ethan Hawke tried to connect with him, he did not want that connection, but he had to keep showing him, you could trust me. I'm not going to beat you. I'm not going to put you in a dog fight. I don't know if it was called White Fang. I think it was White Fang. That was an inspiring movie. I love that movie.
Wow. Oh, wow. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was a beautiful
movie. I think you and I mean, when you look at your dog, I think the basic question that we have to ask is, how much do dogs really know? I was talking to someone the other day, and she said that after she read the book, A Dog Named Leaf, she was going to do a test. Her and her husband were just blown away by the book, and they said, well, we have a dog, and we're going to tell the dog to go into the other room and pick out the toy. And they described the toy to him in regular talking language and just told the dog, go get your toy, the red and white one that has a little mouse, funny hairy ear or something. So the dog listened to him, got up, walked into the other room, and there's lots and lots of toys, and he picked the exact one they told him to go get and brought him back and dropped at their feet. I'm saying that he understood what these people were asking because he lived with them. He may understand it in ways we don't understand, but he knew what they wanted him to bring back to their feet. And I'm just saying, when you just test how smart your dog is, sometimes we just don't give them enough credit. You know, when I had Leaf, and I found out after about a few months after I got Leaf from the shelter, and he was still having all sorts of problems, I found out that I had an unruptured brain aneurysm, and I would have to go get surgery. Well, the moment I found out, Leaf was so sweet and so completely there for me, even though he still didn't like to be touched so much, and we were still having all those things with his howling and staying up all night because he was scared. But he began really understanding, just like a lot of dogs do, that I have a job here, and my job is to help him, my daddy. I mean, a lot of people think of dogs viewing them as mommy and daddy or my person, to help him through this, and he started to really work it. Now, dogs love to have jobs, and when they have a real job like helping you, especially when you're going through a hard time, they really, really go for it because now they have a purpose. And like all of us, we really do want a purpose. You know, you're sharing all the things on your radio show or The Bright Side. It's just beautiful that people can listen to you and your fans can get that viewpoint. And that's a job. That's a real job that helps people, just like he was helping me. And we went through a lot together. It's all in the book, which I'm really glad I was able to write.
You know, it brings me to another article that they did in New York Post, this gentleman named Horowitz. He went on to explain how dogs, when listening to us, they're really responding to sounds, and they process our babbling in conjunction with other signs and body language to work out our meaning. So these dogs are just as bright as us. We gotta listen. They listen to us, and we gotta listen to them. Take out the time. Not Dr. Doolittle. They're not going to probably actually talk to you in English, but they are talking.
They are, aren't they? It would be funny if it was like Dr. Doolittle, but that's probably not going to happen.
I wish it was. Hey, man, I'm ready to go for a walk. You've been sitting there all day. Come on now.
Oh, exactly.
Well, Alan,
you're right.
You talk about that you was into police work. Why did you get into that?
Well, you know, I actually went to the University of Georgia and got I was very lucky because I got out of the military and I was able not to have to work all the time to go to school, but I did work some jobs, and went through the University of Georgia and I got a degree in journalism. And I was actually going to do weather stuff because in the military I was doing weather stuff and I was going to be a weatherman. And then I had a motorcycle accident and I looked like Frankenstein. I really did. My nose and my face was all scarred up because that's what hit the car. And that was it was kind of interesting because maybe it wasn't meant for me to do that. And I thought, well, I do want to write. I'd love to write. And I want to also do something that might help people. I don't know what it is. And then I saw the ad that they were looking for in Atlanta, some police officers. And I applied and I got the job. And I started realizing that if I was in a situation where, especially domestic or other types of situations where I can actually help, instead of make it worse, I make it better and maybe get this situation resolved and people, you know, separated, whatever it needed to happen. I knew that I really liked this work. Plus, I was able to develop more things for characters and things that I might be writing about later. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I was working South Atlanta, and I was going to go, and I had a domestic, and I went there. And these two, man and woman, were just arguing, and they were really getting, you know, they were just really at each other. And there was this little 8-year-old boy on a nice green couch right in their living room, and there was a dim lamp. And right next to the boy was a dog, a medium-sized dog. Kind of looked like a part pit bull, but maybe kind of mixed breed. And this dog was licking the boy and comforting the boy and doing everything he can to make this young man, this young boy, 8-year-old boy, not cry and be more comforted, even with the man and woman just really, really going after each other. And I took a snapshot of that. And I realized at that moment that the only real adult in that situation, in that apartment, was that dog doing the things he needed to do to make sure that young child was being protected and taken care of. Well, I took care of the situation. I separated them. You know, I was thinking it was, of course, probably drug related. And all I wanted to do was make sure no one hurt each other at that point. And they agreed that the next day they would get together and talk at a more reasonable level. And, all that was taken care of. But I remember thinking, I want to write about that. I want to write about dogs. I want to write about cats. I want to write about people and their relationship with their animals and how things are better because of that animal. And that was a long, long time ago. And then, of course, after that night, I went home, and then we had a dog at the time named Prana. She was a golden retriever, and she would always, at the end of the night, like midnight, 12:30, she would come over, and she'd just rest her body on me and help me relax and, you know, kind of feel, because sometimes these nights were really hard work and a lot going on. But the best part was that I knew, and this is like for 8 years I did this kind of work, I knew for a fact that I did some decent work that made things better for people and for their situations. I always had, you know, good stats. I always did the best job I could do, but it was a good thing for me to do, especially with looking like Frankenstein for a while. People took me more seriously, which was kind of nice. So I had a couple of surgeries, and I started looking less like Frankenstein, so I went to other work in Minneapolis. And that's when my wife and I decided to start sharing these stories and writing about these stories. And it was very, very special. We were, you know, walking around, and we were basically saying, what can we do to bring more love to this world who really does need that? And we also loved animals. So what I did was I said, well, why don't we go ahead and start sharing stories? We can ask people if they've had a story, if they had an experience with their animal or an animal in nature that made them realize that they could be more loving or more compassionate or have more empathy for other people. And that dog or that cat or that whatever animal you might have in your life, you can see a lot of those qualities, what we call spiritual qualities, in those animals. And we learn from it, and we actually become better people because of that. So we decided to share stories. You know what happened? This was like in 1998. We wrote a bunch of stories, and we shared a bunch of stories from other people in a newsletter, and it started really getting popular. And then so we wrote a book based on those stories called Angel Animals, Exploring Our Spiritual Connection with Animals. And you know who took the book and put it on TV and said, this is a good book about animals? Willard Scott on the Today Show. And when that happened, it just started growing. Everything. And so we book after book we wrote every year. We still had to work day jobs because authors don't make a ton of money, but we still enjoyed it, and we every year we brought out another book about animals and humans and their relationships and what and their stories, and it's just been a wonderful ride. And then the last book, most recent one, is about my experience with Leaf and how I really benefited and actually started, you know, realizing I can actually, you know, get through this because of his help.
See how powerful that is? We never know. I mean, this is just a demonstration of just greater love right here between man and animal, or woman and animal, we can't leave out the women. Now, you called the story of you and your dog, Leaf, a dual journey. You say the two of you came together at exactly the right time to help each other heal. What did you mean by that?
That's a great question, and I appreciate you asking because, you know, and this is just the way people are. When out doing the work as a police officer 8 years, I was always seeing the worst people have to offer. And sometimes I would see them and I would wonder, you know, are they going to, is it a lying situation? Is it going to be violent? Where are the drugs? All the things that, you know, you sort of get in your brain. So I started not even thinking, trusting people at all. Well, Leaf also, when I adopted him, he also had trust issues. He didn't believe anything anyone was going to be nice to him, that everyone had something going on, that they were going to be cruel. And so when we met at the shelter, we realized that we were kind of the same. We were looking at the people in our lives, and we just didn't really like people. We thought there were just going to be problems, there were going to be all these things going on there. You know, whether it be a – so it was my loss by having that viewpoint, because if I had that viewpoint, I didn't have to get too close, or I didn't have to really have the empathy or the – what would you call it? I mean, the spiritual quality of just understanding that people go through their things and we have to be okay with that. And Leaf, too, he didn't like to be touched. He didn't like to be – he growled. He nipped sometimes at the beginning because he was afraid of people. They might try to hurt him. So dual journey means that we both had to become better at who we were. He had to become a better dog, and I had to become a better human. And who best to teach each other than two people who understand what each of us are going through, and what the fear and all the things that come into play. Well, I began writing about him, writing all the time. You know, when he does little things, whether we will go for a walk or maybe there's a dog park or something, I began writing about everything I observed about him. And also I began holding him and telling him that he was safe and everything was going to be okay. And we both started really healing just because we could trust each other. We began to understand where we both were coming from. And I'm talking like he's an individual, which I really believe he is. And I know that he understood a lot of things. You know, how much do dogs really know? They know a lot. And I began to begin understanding it's okay to ask for help. Especially when I found out that I had the brain aneurysm and I would need to go have brain surgery and I would need to go take care of myself, but also I couldn't do it all by myself. I would have to ask friends for help, and I hated doing that. And Leaf, he began being nicer. I'll give you an example. We were walking down the sidewalk one time, and this lady comes up and says, oh, what a pretty dog, and she reached down and probably too aggressively, and he growled at her, and she backed off, and I, you know, we walked down the sidewalk a little bit longer. So we went to the car, and I was going to take him to the dog park because I knew he needed some exercise, some running around in a fenced-in area that was safe.
Yeah.
And I talked to him like he was a person. I said, Leaf, why did you growl at that lady? She was only trying to pet you. Why did you growl at her? Why did you take a? Why did you do that? He was bored. He was looking out the window and yawning. But I said to him, I said, Leaf, I want you to do one thing for me today. I want you to be nice to somebody. I don't care who it is. I want you to be nice to somebody, and I want you to show me you can be nice. So we went to the dog park, and we were running. I was throwing the ball, and he was having fun. But he looked over at this older man who was sitting on a bench, and he was throwing a big tennis ball out for his smaller dog who had a hard time holding the ball and bringing it back. And he was tired, and he looked like he was kind of having a hard time walking, and he would get the ball when the dog didn't bring it back and throw it again. And this little dog, this little white dog, didn't want to go get it. So Leaf was watching all this. So he ran over, grabbed the tennis ball, and walked slowly to the man and dropped it at his feet so the man wouldn't have to get up and go find the ball again. And the man looked over at me and says, well, first off, Leaf looked over at me and said, see, it's like he's saying, see, I can be nice. And then the man looked over at me and said, your dog is really nice. So that little lecture I gave him, in my mind, in my experience, told me that he was really showing me that he can be nice.
See, and we don't be thinking they listening, but they do be listening to us. It's just so amazing. It is.
They do.
Mm. And he's so gorgeous. A pretty old
Papa Oh, yeah.
Now, no,
what's your dog's name?
You'll fall in love with Leaf. I like the name Leaf. I do. I like the name. It's because it's like...
He likes to roll around leaves.
Yeah, because he fell from heaven. He came in his own mysterious feet. God sent his angel to the door. So, in your book, you talked about you lost your other dog. What made Leaf different?
I'm sorry, say that again.
I'm sorry, Alan. You talked about losing your other dog, so what made Leaf different?
Well, for one thing, he's a guy. He's a male dog. I've always had female dogs. Also, he's stubborn, and he's an individual, and he often, he lets us know, he lets me know if he likes something or doesn't like something. But he also, our other dog, it was named Taylor, and she was a yellow lab, and she just adored me. She just adored me. She looked at me, and anything I do was just the most wonderful thing, and she was just beautiful. And, sometimes spouses don't adore you like a dog does. They're very sweet, and you love them, but sometimes, a dog just adores you and wants just to be next to you all the time. Well, Leaf is different because he is an individual, and he really does love you, and he wants to be there to help you. But he's not one of those dogs that just look at you with such adoration that there's nothing in the world other than just wanting to be and play with you forever and ever. He's good. He does other things. He has his mind of his own. That's why he's different. And he's also kind of a tough little dog. I mean, he's in a way, he has some street smarts because of his background and, takes care of himself and does the things that, we all need to do to survive and keep ourselves safe and not be in any kind of danger.
Yeah. That just brings me, dogs to me, they're equal to us. They are. They're so much like us. Some people probably wouldn't feel that way. I don't think everybody would agree with that, but I do. I think they're very much equal to us. They want unconditional love. They just want you to show that you care the same way we want it. And as we said before, he didn't trust anybody, and we don't either. When we get hurt, it's hard for us to trust. But this is what I want to ask, Alan. Now, you have worked in the police force for many years. How did you come about beginning to trust and view people positively?
Now this is interesting because a lot of your listeners may or may not agree with this, but this was my experience. I was watching Leaf, and he's always at, he basically is getting to the point where he is trusting people, and it's no big deal if someone helps him, especially if, I throw the ball too far, it goes into the river or something, someone else goes out and gets it for him. He's okay with all that. And I began realizing I needed to also let that happen. But I tell you one thing, I had a really awful dream before the brain surgery. And I was doing computer work at the time, and this, you know, and then Leif was still having his problems, but I really had an awful dream. And the dream was that I was going to, and maybe my subconscious was trying to tell me something, but the dream was I was in watching this massive line of people, and they were all going into this magnificent big building, and it was sort of organic. It was, you know, growing and all that. And I learned it was the building of life in my dream. These people were going into the building of life to experience love and libraries and forest and work and all the things that life would give them to experience. But they all had something in their hand, and it looked like I found out it was a ticket. They were given permission to continue on with their lives. And I looked down at my hand, and I did not see a ticket. I did not see any paper. I was thinking, my God, I don't have a ticket. I tried to run into the line to get in with them, and they kept on looking at me and said, you don't belong here. You don't have a ticket. They were kind of growly, too. I mean, like, you know, how dare you come into the line of life when you're not even supposed to be in this building. You're no longer going to live. So I left the line, and I woke up in a sweat. I was really, really, it was a nightmare. And Leif, who was still afraid of being touched, jumped on the bed and really let me pet him, and he comforted me. And he must have saw me, you know, scrawling about. And I was, later in the morning, we got up, and I was talking to my wife, Linda, about it, my dream. And I showed her my hand. It was empty. There was no ticket. I was no longer allowed to be in the line that would go into the building of life. Well, Leif was sitting at my feet listening to every word. And he started doing something later on that day, probably an hour later, hour and a half later, that he had never done before. He went into the living room and with his paw pushed all the papers off the table, the magazines and newspapers, and began ripping the paper up into smaller pieces of paper. Then he would put his mouth on the paper, grab them, and bring him over to me, trying to get me to hold on or to grab that piece of paper. And you know what he was trying to do?
What was that? Because that's what I was going to ask. Why would he tear up this paper?
Yeah. And he was trying to give me a ticket. He was trying to give me some paper to tell me that I can live. I was going to have a ticket because he was listening. He understood what I was trying to tell Linda about not having that piece of paper, that ticket in my hand, so I wasn't able to go into the building of life in my dream. And this poor dog, who's trying to help any way he knows how to do, knew that that was important to me to have a ticket. And so he was grabbing and ripping up paper. He did it twice, and I didn't even know at the time what he was trying to do. I went ahead and picked up everything and put it away. But he really was trying to let me know that I was going to have a ticket and I was going to do what I needed to do to keep on living. And it's just like, how much do dogs really know? And what are they trying? They just do all sorts of things to try to bring you comfort.
But that reminds me of one day my husband had lost his glasses, and he was talking to Blue. He said, I lost my glasses outside. And my husband didn't think nothing of it, just talking off the top of his head out loud. And when he opened up the door the next day, the glasses were actually on the porch because Blue had went out there and bought them. Because my husband couldn't find them nowhere out there, but Blue found those glasses. Of course, he had to replace them because they were all scratched at the very but Blue let us know. Your glasses for you.
Oh, that's perfect. That is beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a Siberian Husky. He's mixed with a German Shepherd. He's just gorgeous. I love him so much. That's my baby. But he don't pay too much attention to me. He loved my husband. I guess most people say it because my husband was seen by him first. Yeah, I come in last because I'd be like, Blue, come to me. Blue looked like, no, I love you, but I saw him first. I have to trick Blue. I have to rub on him, then he'll come and sit by me. He's spoiled. He's spoiled, Alan. He's a spoiler rascal. And my twin girls don't make it any easier. They will actually put the little food in their little hand and feed him, so he gets spoiled by that. Yes.
Gosh. You said his name is Blue?
Yes, his name is actually Blue with his pretty blue eyes.
Oh.
Oh. I love them, though. Like I said, they really tickle you up. And look at that. Leaf up there, tearing up paper, throwing sickness. They just do stuff so amazingly.
Oh, yeah.
But, this is what I wanted to ask. Because I know it was hard losing Taylor. How long did it take for you to actually endure that love for Leaf?
I was still in a lot of pain even when we adopted Leif. And I to this day, I still miss her. So I don't know if you ever get over it. I think it just dissipates a little bit over time. But when you lose someone you love, yeah.
Because you have other albums as well. You have Daughters, too. And I know in the book you mentioned that you and Linda had to go talk to the other animals about bringing
What do you think about that?
I know. I thought it was so funny, but they're part of the family. So now I got to actually go and talk to the rest of the family and get their opinion. And people will actually say, you're crazy. No, they know what I'm talking about. They know.
Uh-huh.
So I got to go confront them. But see, they would have saw Leaf while she confronted them, they were going to start acting up. The birds probably going to start pooping. Those shoes probably going to be torn up by Taylor, by the other animals. So they know. They know what's going on.
Yes.
I got shook about it. And I think you said the lady who you was mentioning to about it, they was looking like, okay, go discuss it to the children. Never mind. They're thinking, oh, he's going to go discuss it to the children or maybe to the mom and to the grandparents. No. He's going to go talk to these birds. That's what he's actually going to go do. They need to know what's going on.
That didn't really happen. It had to happen. Yeah. We had to do that just to see if the cats and the birds were okay with new. It really was funny. And they were, I guess, okay. They didn't realize. It wasn't going to be because they used to sleep with Taylor, and they used to be on the couch together. And when you're looking for a cat, sometimes because it's warmer, she'd pop up underneath the tail of the yellow lab. It's so cute. But Leaf was not like Taylor. Didn't probably had never met a cat before, so.
People are so almost jealous. They get jealous for your love. They compete. They want that same attention. So, no, I didn't find it cool when you put that in the book. No, I liked it. I did. Tell us about your failed strategy for breaking the bad news to your wife, Linda. Why were you so determined not to have her become emotional?
Oh, have to figure out what to do when someone cries. But I was at work and I got the call from the doctor and he said, you have a brain aneurysm, and gave me the recommendation on who to I had dizzy spells is what was going on. So I went ahead and got a checkup, and then the x-ray showed that the dizzy spells had nothing to do with the brain aneurysm or the what had to happen. It was just a way of getting me to the doctor, I think. So what I did, and this is something that, you know, guys might be doing more than they should. And no one's saying that men are very smart. Sometimes they're not. I'm just talking about me right now. Sometimes they are, but this time it probably wasn't the best thing to do. I went back to my office, and I started researching about brain aneurysms. And I was thinking, how in the world am I going to tell Linda? If I had this reaction and I really felt like, all the stuff was really happening where I was didn't know what to do and I was a broken brain and all that, my father had an early stroke at a young age, so I just remember him being in so much pain and always needing help, and I certainly never wanted to do that. And so all this was coming back, and, of course, Leaf howling every night, never sleeping. I was sleep-deprived. So I went to my computer, and I did research, trying to figure out what this is all about. And, of course, the Internet has all sorts of bad stuff, always.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and found and decided I was going to write a fact sheet on what was going on, and I was going to call it a surgical procedure, and I was going to do all the things, make it a one-pager, really clean, with nice success stories in there, so she would not have the reaction that I did earlier that morning when I first found out.
Mm-hmm.
So I went home with this beautiful creation, and, you probably will be amused because it's definitely not something that is a reasonable thing to do in that kind of situation, but to me it was most wonderful way of telling her what was going on. So I beautiful fact sheet, one sheet, easy to read. I gave it to her when I got home, and she read it, and she looked at me, and this is her quote. She says, "You have a unruptured brain aneurysm. You're going to have open brain surgery, and you gave me a memo?" And I thought, if she puts it that way, it's probably kind of true that that was not exactly the way you're supposed to handle these sort of things. I was about to tell her, I wasn't really going to tell you at all. I was hoping you may go visit your parents or something in Texas. And then when I started saying that, she looked at me in a way that I knew I better be quiet. So I didn't say anything else. And then after a few minutes, and she, you know, talked about all the things that we had in stake, and you know, all the things that could go wrong. So I held her hand and we listened, and she cried. But I did the right thing after I realized that the fact sheet was not going to be something that she would really like to have after she read it. And for all the guys out there, if you ever have something you have to tell your significant other, your girlfriend, your wife, whatever it is, if you had to tell them something that's really bad, bad news, just sit with them somewhere, hold their hands and tell them, so you can go through that without writing a really wonderful, wonderful fact sheet or a memo.
I know that was hard because we women, we tend to get so emotional, and you know, I think that's why my husband won't tell me a lot of things, because he know I would just freak out. But you're right. You just have to take them somewhere and just sit down, look. This is what it is. My coworker, her mother actually had an aneurysm. Those are no joke.
No, yep. Not at all.
Mm-mm. Mm. Oh, thank God you made it through, Alan. Amen for that. Lord, Jesus.
Oh, yes, yeah.
That is good. We got a good God. We sure do. I'm so glad you made it through.
Oh, me too.
What would you consider the worst moment as you and Linda face losing everything?
Well, I worked on and created a manual of all the things that she would need to do if something were to happen where I was not fully mentally able, or I died during this process of the surgery or whatever. And I was, you know, Leif was at my feet. He was exhausted. He was there for me, but I was going through all the, like, you know, we all have to have passwords to do certain things, and we all have different things with insurance and all the things that we have to do all the time, all the bills, everything that we have to take care of. And I want it all in one place so she can easily find what she needs to do and what needs to be done with anything that happens if something were to happen to me. Well, it was just really, really depressing because I would work all day. I'd come home at night, work on the manual, and I could look down at Leif, and I felt so sorry for him because I was supposed to be taking care of him. I was adopting him. I was going to make his life better and safer. And he was taking on so much, he was just exhausted because I was feeling so bad all the time. And I kind of realized at that point that really things may not work out. And it really could be bad because this, you know, this whole manual brought it to the point where I was doing what I thought was the right thing, but made me realize that it really could turn out bad. Of course, I had this aneurysm before. This is before surgery that could explode at any time and bleed. So it was, you know, those days leading up to it, that was really hard. And I also, during this process, during the testing, they saw a big blood clot in one of the tests, and that was in a vein that was aimed right for my heart. So they had to do some insertion of a metal device, umbrella type thing that would keep the thing from going to my heart, because they couldn't do blood thinning medication because that would affect the surgery, and they don't want to do that with an aneurysm. So it was all very much that things could be coming to an end. And this manual will help Linda, and Leif was exhausted, and all of a sudden it just piled on, and I was just didn't know what was going to happen. And that was a low, very low point at that moment.
Oh, wow. Oh, boy, this sounds so traumatic, but, I mean, boy, God did have his reasons, and, you know, I would love to know, how did his name come about, Leif?
Okay, when we first adopted him, his name was Harley. His name was Harley when we got him from the shelter, because a Harley motorcycle, according to their cameras, brought him in and dumped him at the back door of the shelter.
Yeah.
So when we got him, we walked around. First off, we drove to a little place or a place where there's a little lake, and we could walk around it just because we wanted to get him some fresh air. And there was this Harley motorcycle that drove past the car, and he growled, and he got so angry at that motorcycle. He cowered. He was angry. And then we realized he didn't like Harleys. He didn't like motorcycles. And then when we walked around, he started playing in some leaves and started just being a little one-year-old puppy, so to speak, and after all that trauma he's been through, playing in leaves. And so I looked at him and I said, Leif. And he popped his head up and came over, And I realized that this was going to be his new name because he really did love to play in leaves and just enjoy just frolicking around without having to worry about anything. Harley, he didn't come to. He didn't like the word Harley. The shelter gave him that because of the motorcycle.
Now, faced with the death or disability, what unique perspectives did you gain on fulfilling your purpose in life?
Well, my purpose in life is simple enough. I want to make sure people understand that animals, just like people, have a special part of them that's divine, that God created, and we all know that that's a beautiful way of looking at life with that special spiritual part of each of us. Now, soul is soul, and I really do want people to understand that their animals are there to help them, and you are there to help the animals. And you made an agreement. God knows what the agreement is and when it was made, but you two and you three and you five, whatever number of animals you have, what number of family members with children and husbands and all the other people, that group of people and that group of animals all together are a family. And they are there to help each other grow and become better people, better animals. And if you realize that, especially men who tend to, not think about these sort of things, if you realize that, you will become more than you were yesterday because you can see in that animal the love that you deserve to have, and you realize that, yeah, I am worthy of love. I am okay. Just open your eyes and understand there's a lot more going on than just an owner of a pet, but you really do have a special friend and a special being there that knows more, a lot more in different ways than maybe... Maybe you want to admit, it's scary to say that animals are smart. It's scary to say that they're soul. It's scary to say that they are special just like you are in their own way. But it really is important if you want to really get the most you can out of your life, because if you don't close that door, when you come home at night, all you have is a chair and a TV set, bills to pay, kids to raise, all the other things. But if you go home at night and you have a special animal that gets on your lap, meows or licks your nose or whatever it is they do to show affection, you have something special that opens up your heart, and you realize that there's more to life than just all the have-tos. You can actually enjoy the animal, and with that open heart, you can enjoy your kids more, you can enjoy your friends more, you can enjoy your spouse more, you can enjoy your girlfriend or boyfriend more. Life is better when you have animals in your life. And if you can't have an animal in your life, go volunteer at a shelter. Go there a couple of hours a week and just spend time with dogs and cats and birds and all the people and all the different animals at the shelter that need your help. At least you're going to have that as part of your life, even though your home or your apartment doesn't allow pets. So there's lots of different ways of doing exactly that thing you need to make your life more fuller.
Yes, I totally agree with you on that, Alan, all the way, 100%. Talk about things that happen to you that are similar to what people report with near-death experiences. Is heaven real?
Yes, and I guess the dream about the building of life, because it was like a real dream, it was not the dream, but it was actually you were there, that tells me that there's more going on. Now, I'm going to give you an example. Let's say through this whole process, there's constant reminders that there's more going on than just here. That you can experience in dreams or just in your daily life that there's a special part that will end up going and being and still existing elsewhere. We all call it different things. I think heaven is a good word. Of course, it's more descriptive and people understand it, but there's something special in all of us. Now, when I had that dream, I thought to myself, oh, my God, and Leif afterwards went and got papers and tried to give them to give me my ticket. So as I was going into surgery, and I remember seeing Leif in my mind's eye, oh, that sweet dog, and I visited my family and all that before going in there, as the mask was coming down to put me to sleep, I saw Leif again. I saw Leif again as the mask was coming down, only a few seconds, and he had a piece of paper in his mouth, and he dropped it. And I was still thinking that I was going to, this is not going to turn out good, and I was really kind of stressed out, and I really And when I reached out in my mind's eye and touched that piece of paper, I realized that all this time Leaf was trying to give me my ticket to life. And I held on to it. And I knew in my heart, and I relaxed, and I was breathing deeply again, that I had my ticket, that everything was going to be okay, that life will continue. And then I was able to go to sleep and be put under for the surgery with at least that reassurance. And I no longer thought, and I no longer felt that this was not going to turn out good, all because of him. And inside of me, in my head, I saw him. Now, I don't really care if people say, oh, it's your imagination. I don't care if people say, oh, you know, you were just so desperate for something. It doesn't matter, because it was important at that moment. When that happened, I realized that I was going to live. And because it was so important in that moment, it really is, and that's, you know, if that's one thing, it made me know that I was loved. And you know how, and I don't want to, you know, get too much into the spiritual part, but God loves people. God loves life. God loves you. God loves me. But sometimes we don't recognize it unless it comes in a furry, with a furry face like me, or with a gentle reminder that you do have a ticket to continue your life. So, you know, it's all part of those beautiful messages that these beautiful animals give us. And that's why we named the whole thing we're trying to do is angel animals. It's because it's like an angelic messenger via the Greek description of the word angel, and they're coming here in all forms to make our lives better. And, you know, guess who is a clean and pure and beautiful vehicle for that love, God's love, is a dog or a cat or an animal. And often that's all the only way we can recognize it, because we're so, you know, we're harsh, aren't we? We kind of view the life as in a harsher way, and we're afraid of opening up to people sometimes, because you just don't know if we can trust. But you can trust an animal, and therefore your heart can be open.
You're right. If we don't see it, we don't believe it.
Exactly.
We know we feel the air blowing outside, but we don't see creation and none of this. So we don't believe it might be him blowing the air. Well, I don't know what they believe who was doing it. So it really does amaze me.
Yes.
So are there any new journeys for you and Lee?
Oh, yeah. We're just enjoying and moving, and I travel a lot, so he has his time with my wife Linda, and they spend special time together. And then when I come home, we go out and walk and play and throw the ball and do all the things he loves to do. That just being a dog, just being a regular dog.
Now, where can people find out more about a dog named Leaf, the hero from heaven who saved my life?
Well, they can go to the website, adognamedleaf.com. The book is in bookstores. It's on Amazon and barnesandnoble.com. And there's also an audio version. If you want to, instead of having to read it, you can also listen to it. And there's a Kindle version where you can get it electronically for your reader. So there's different ways of reading the book or looking at it. I tell you one thing, people really, I was surprised when people read the book, they tell me they really liked it. And they even put reviews on Amazon on how much they liked it. So I don't think people will be disappointed if they get the book, because there's a lot of little surprises. The police thing was a big surprise to some people. They never knew me in that way, so they really were shocked to realize I once did that work in Atlanta and some of my experiences there. So I think people would really enjoy and some people say, when I started reading, I thought I was going to read it for an hour and then put it down, but I couldn't put it down because I had to find out what happened. So it was kind of fun to hear those kind of nice things said.
Now, Alan, we discussed a few things that about what's in that book, but what will others discover when they read this book?
Well, I tell you one, you know, if you let's say you're going to have a medical thing going on and you need to go see a doctor and he's a specialist. We went to see a doctor here in Minnesota that was a really, really disrespected brain surgery person. He had a book, he writes papers, he has a whole wing of a hospital dedicated to him. Well, I never met him, so I went to see him to take him the x-rays and see what he thinks and if we need to do additional tests. And we went into his office. And the one thing, you know, with brain aneurysms is there are all kinds of sizes and different things. Some of them are going to be easily clipped. which is a procedure they do to keep the blood from bleeding in the brain. And so we went in there, and he came in, and he sat down, and my wife whispered something to me, but I didn't really understand it. But she told me, Doogie Howser. You remember that program used to be on where the doctor was like 14? Long time ago. And he was Dr. Doogie Howser. He looked so young. This guy looked like a 12-year-old. His hands were so soft and so small. He was so young. And he was just incredible. So, he looked like one of those young doctors. And, of course, he wasn't that young, but he looked young. And the only thing I can think of is that at least he has steady hands, because young people, their hands don't shake when they're doing such delicate surgery. But he was so respected, and he's the best in the Midwest. Some say best in the country when it comes to this type of procedure, that just couldn't help it. So if you are going to a doctor, and it doesn't matter about race, it doesn't matter about age, it doesn't matter about anything other than the fact that he has the credentials to help you during a challenging time and you need that doctor, don't judge the doctor based on anything other than his competence. And I've learned that by going to see this guy. It was really funny. I asked him a few questions, and then at the end he says, "Oh, I can take care of this. I can do anything." He's just basically very confident and young and capable, and I'm really glad I found him. So that's one thing. And actually, he read the book, and he vetted everything that we put in there about him, and he actually liked and was amused by the fact that we viewed him as a Doogie Howser, which was a program on years ago on television about this young doctor doing surgery.
I actually remember that show, and I'm 31 as of this year. But you know what? I just wanted to say, it just amazes me, because Lee, yes, he was traumatized, and he came into your life. God sent people, he sent animals, or anything mysteriously into your life, and that's what he did. I mean, because I know it had to be fearful just to know that you got this aneurysm, you got to go up on the knife, but he said that dog to you, hey, this is your ticket. I have not given up on you yet. It's an amazing story. No one could actually know what that's like. I don't even know what that's like. But I can sympathize, I can try to relate, but you don't know what it's like until you actually go through it. That's deep, Alan. That's really powerful.
Well, thank you.
You're so welcome. Alan, are there any more books coming out? Because I know, is this like the 15th book, or because you got 50 or 60?
Yeah, this was the 15th book, and we have books like Angel Dogs and all the stories about dogs and how they help people, and cats, angel cats, and horses, too, all the things that horses do, especially in therapy and other things that horses do to help people. So this is the 15th book, and we're going to have one coming out next year, and it's going to be about the animal actors, the people that are in movies and television, and how they're treated and how they act and what they do to really give really good performances in TV and movies.
Yes. Well, Al, I do appreciate you for being on this show and sharing your thoughts on what other people don't believe in. And we have to start believing. We don't always have to see it. We got to get out of that habit. You got to have faith. Do you believe? That's how I always ask, do you believe in faith? Do you have faith? Do you have hope? You don't see that, but it's there. But, Alan, I just want to say thank you again for taking out your time to be on my show today.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for asking. That was very special. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. And we got to definitely stay in touch, Alan. I always love to stay in touch with all my guests just to see how you're doing, even if it's just to say hello.
Good. Looking forward to it.
All right, Alan. Well, you and your family, Lise, everybody, have a blessed one.
Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Well, my guests, I appreciate you for tuning in. I did have someone to tune into the chat room. I'm sorry that you tuned out, but I hope on the next round that you do tune in. And I appreciate everybody for liking my Facebook fan page. Please go to Alan's website. You can find him through Google You can find his network. It's wonderful. He has so many books out there. And let's all believe, trust and believe in the Lord. He can stand animals in a serious way. Don't think it's just all about people. Tomorrow on my show, I will be having a young lady named Jen Whitman, and I will let her tell you all about herself. Sometimes I like to tell you about the guests. Sometimes I just like to be spontaneous and let them surprise you. But please do tune in at 12 p.m. tomorrow, and you know I love you. But before I leave, I just want to hit you with a little gospel song. I don't want nobody to go out. So if your heart is troubled, I will tell you, you don't have to be troubled anymore. The Lord got you. Yes, he does.
Will you clap your hands right here? Come on. My God reigns.
My God reigns.
Our God reigns.
Our God reigns.
Lord, you reign above every name. Yeah. Sing my God reigns.
My God reigns.
Sing our God reigns, y'all.
Our God reigns.
Sing, Lord, you reign above every name. Come on, say with power and majesty.
Power and majesty. Dominion, authority. You reign.
Sing it again with power.
With power and majesty. Dominion, authority. You reign.
Come on, let's go right here. Oh, sing my God reigns. Come on.
My God reigns.
Sing our God reigns.
Our God reigns.
Tell him, Lord, you reign. But God came to hear you sing. Open your mouth, say, over my face.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.